Hello. You're listening to the first episode of a new online series, Test Tube Travels, the show that takes a sideways look at some of our most pressing scientific issues. In today's programme, Doctor Who and his trusted companion Clara travel through time to find out what happened to the flowers.
Clara, this is Earth. You don't recognise it, do you?
No. What's happened? It looks like the world has ended.
Well, Clara, this is planet Earth in the year 2100. And in a way, the world has ended. Tell me, what do you see?
Well, actually, I think I recognise this place. I think we're outside the recording studio I went to as a child. It was just down the road from Hampton Court Palace.
Yes, you're right. I've put the sonic screwdriver on binocular mode. Have a look over there.
Oh, yes. I can see Hampton Court Palace over there. But I just don't understand. We must be in Richmond in London. So that stinking river must be the Thames? But loads of people live around here, and I can't see anyone. And there used to be so many trees. I can't see any. And there are no flowers. I can't even see any weeds. What happened to everything? To us? Was it the Daleks?
No, it wasn't the Daleks.
What then? A nuclear bomb?
No, it wasn't a bomb either. You may not believe this. It was the plants.
What on earth do you mean?
Well, let me take you on a journey.
Oh, I can see we're still at the recording studio. So what year is it?
It's 2030. Quick, let's go inside. There's a live television interview being recorded. Let's go sit in the audience. I want you to hear this.
Okay, shh. I think it's about to start.
Welcome to Science Weekly. Today in the studio, we're joined by Dr. John Miller from Tropical Sales, the largest banana production and sales company in the world. Dr. Miller is a banana plant expert, and today we will be discussing the disappearance of the banana from our supermarket shelves. So, Dr. Miller, how do you explain the dying out of the banana?
Well, they didn't actually die out. There are thousands of varieties.
So you're actually telling us that we do still have other varieties of banana?
Yes, like I said, thousands of species and varieties, and a lot of them are used commercially, most for the production of textiles, but there are also some species which are used for food.
But if there are all these different types of banana, why has the banana disappeared from the supermarket shelf?
Well, that's a bit of a special thing with bananas. When our breeders find a plant which produces really nice fruits, then they will propagate it only by cuttings, like every gardener does at home. Therefore, all the plants in the vast, beautiful banana plantations all over the world are genetically exactly identical. This ensures that we can bring them to our customers at a low price and that every customer at any time gets the best product available.
So you're saying that all the bananas that we've always eaten are clones of a single banana?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic, isn't it? And, by the way, did you ever realize that there are no seeds in bananas, which makes them quite nice to eat? But, well, how do you propagate or how do you grow a plant from fruits without seeds?
But bananas have still vanished from the supermarket shelves.
Well, unfortunately, it can happen. When a fungus develops the ability to kill one plant, it can very quickly erase all the others because they are the same. It actually happened in the 1960s and was called the Panama disease. After that, we started growing the bananas like we all know them today. I pretty much guess, though, that no one in the audience even knows about it. And in a few years, it will be the same as the new bananas we will be selling then.
So these bananas that we're growing now could also become infected with disease, which could wipe them out. So are we not learning from our mistakes? Are you not concerned that at some point there will be no more bananas?
Oh, come on, Becky, we don't need to scare the people. Perhaps the next bananas you can buy will be red, but no one will care. There will always be bananas.
So, Doctor, I guess the disease did kill all the bananas in the end. Is that what happened to all the other plants too?
No, Clara. That was only one part of the problem. Let's go to the radio archive room to find out more. Okay, here we are. Here's a tape of an interview from last week.
Well, go on then. Press play.
We're here in Snowdonia National Park, looking at the last Snowdon lily. I'm with Poppy Gardner, a professor in plant conservation. This is a sad day, isn't it? What's happened?
Well, the Snowdon lily is a plant which has decreased dramatically because of the effects of climate change. I'll just describe it to our audience. It's a small, white, slender flower nestled in amongst the other grasses and plants on the ground.
This is a beautiful flower. Exactly why has it declined?
Well, as the temperature has increased, its range has moved up the mountain. But there's only so far up the mountain it can go. So as climate change has continued, it's eventually reached a point where it just can't move any further. And its numbers have decreased. Until now, this is the last one left.
Is this situation unique to the Snowdon lily? Or are other plants facing this problem too?
Over the past few years, we've seen lots of extinctions. Plants face a particular problem in that they can't move as easily as animals. This means, as the climate changes, it can be harder for them to keep pace with it as they try to move to stay in their normal temperature range. Although both plants and animals face the same problem at the tops of mountains and at the poles, so our Arctic and Alpine plants, they just can't move any further as temperatures increase. So yes, lots of plants are threatened because of this.
So this is actually a major problem, isn't it?
Yes, and it's made worse because lots of plants rely on other organisms to pollinate them. So bees, flies, wasps, birds, and even larger animals. If these move north at a different pace to the plants, they can't be pollinated and reproduce. So the interactions between plants and animals are really important to their survival. And these can be mucked up by climate change.
So this is actually really complicated.
Yes, it is. And it's even more complicated than that. There are lots and lots of different interactions. Competition, predators, which all make predicting the effects of climate change really difficult for us. But as we can see, sadly, beautiful flowers like this going extinct is the end result.
Are there any success stories here?
Well, in some cases, some plants have surprised us and evolved much more rapidly than we expected. You might have noticed things have changed their flowering times. We've also managed to protect some things by moving them to other locations, relocation. Sometimes it works, but again, it depends on whether other interactions still work. A big problem is that our habitat is really fragmented, so even things that move naturally by seed dispersal can be prevented from doing so successfully because of cities in the way. Protected areas can really help, but it can be difficult for us to know where to put them as the climate is changing so rapidly.
So this is all very complex and sounds pretty bleak. What can we expect in the future?
Well, we're in the year 2030 and we've both seen over the last few years how rapidly the climate has changed. So although we can make predictions, who knows what will really happen over the coming decades and how plants will survive.
Okay, thank you for that, Professor Gardner. Let's hope things improve in the future.
So, Doctor, I see some plants died out because of climate change too. I guess everything was dying out in the end because of disease and climate change. Did it, Doctor?
Yes, Clara. Those things and a lack of biodiversity led to all the plants dying out. And, well, you've seen the consequences of that.
But didn't anyone try to do anything about it?
Well, they did. Here, have a listen to this other radio programme from 2013.
I'm here with Professor John Hellebore at the recently developed Millennium Seed Bank at Wakehurst Place. Can you tell me more about the seed bank?
Sure, let me take you on a tour of our facility. So the seed bank that we have here at Wakehurst Place is part of a global Plant Conservation Initiative, and it's in partnership with about 50 countries and other institutes like this around the world. And the point really of it is to safeguard our plants for the future. So to collect and store seeds of as many plant species as possible and to have them safe in this underground bunker that we have here.
So I noticed that the walls are really thick and there are a lot of doors. Why is this?
Well, exactly. That's very good that you observed that, because the point is really that they have to be kept safe. There's no point just having a store. It needs to be kept safe. So in the same manner that you wouldn't keep a backup of your computer next to your computer or in the flimsiest form possible on an old USB stick, you're going to have a proper safe copy of that. So here we've got all these seeds and we've got them safely stored underground with really, really thick walls, which basically safeguards against all types of climate change and natural disasters and possibly even things such as nuclear explosions.
So what is actually in the collection? What is its significance? And what are all these jars that I see around us?
Yeah, so let me just take you along. So in each jar you can see a different type of plant species, and there are perhaps 100 or up to thousands of seeds depending on the size of the seed. And at the moment we currently have 10% of the world's plant species, wild and also crop species, in these jars, and hopefully by the year 2020 we'll have 25% of plant species. And what this really does is it gives us a bank full of the world species, so in case something goes wrong, we then have them here.
So I don't quite understand, how will the seed bank impact on plant conservation?
Well, if you think about it like this, you have your favourite orchid in the wild, or you have your particular plant that we rely on for food. If that were to just go extinct, you know, due to climate change or habitat destruction, what we can do is we can reintroduce plants from the seed bank, so we can grow them here from the resources that we have, grow up new plants and reintroduce them back into the wild and thereby recreate natural populations as they once were.
So what research do you do here and how does it tie in with the seed bank collections?
Yes, well, I'm a professor of evolutionary genetics, so I study the genetic variation we have in plants and how plants have evolved. And if we can understand that, I believe we can understand how they might evolve in the future and how we can maintain diversity in the population.
Why is genetic diversity so important?
Well, genetic diversity is crucial because if you think that all plants of one species were a clone, all identical, all it takes is a sudden change one year, you know, perhaps a drought or perhaps some type of fungus or virus disease to go through that. And all of those plants, because they're the same, they will all die out and go extinct. But if we maintain genetic diversity and variation, then we are safeguarding against such things because some plants will survive and they will boost back numbers up to the normal population size, and thereby the plant will be safe.
I can see that the seed bank initiative is crucial. It sounds as if we have a fail-safe plan already in place here.
Yes, well, I certainly think so. And I mean, that is the point of this, of initiatives such like this. That's the reason, that's the overarching aim that we've done such sort of work. And hopefully, you know, by the year 2030, we may have 50% or all of the world's plant species seed banked and safeguarded here, such that no matter what happens in the future, we can replenish natural diversity and plants will be there in our future.
But Doctor, wasn't the answer in the seed banks all along? What went wrong?
I don't know exactly. Maybe climate change just got so bad that nothing would grow anyway.
Or back in 2013, wasn't there a global recession? I think lots of people were unemployed, and the government slashed the science funding. Maybe there wasn't enough investment in the seed banks.
Yes, probably it was a combination of things.
So, isn't there anything we can do?
Well, Clara, this is only one version of the future. It's not fixed yet. I believe that if humanity makes the right decisions and plan better for the future, things will work out okay. Like I say, the future isn't fixed yet.
Well, I hope that something good happens.
Tune in next week to hear another Test Tube Travel adventure. The Doctor and Clara get caught in a world of superhumans. Will they be able to unravel their scientific secrets?